Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You know, Hub, I think you hit a great point there.
Hub Arkish.
The Arkish family in pro football media journalism has been around almost as long as the game itself.
670 The Score's NFL Insider.
Hub, would you consider being the GM for the Chicago Bears?
George McCaskey, if you're listening, I'm waiting for the call.
Shaw Media and Pro Football Weekly.
I'm thinking of topics for my column to be published in Pro Football Weekly.
Okay. You let me know when you're ready.
Okay. The brain is spinning. The bet has officially been won.
Whoa, that didn't sound like you're looking forward to it, Hub.
You know, guys, Matt, something you need to understand here. I forgot about this bet 5 minutes after we made it.
Hub Arkish, that's getting better than this.
Hub Arkish with Parkinson Spiegel on 670 The Score.
And our conversations with Hub are brought to you by the Marquee Sports Network. Watch Bear Essentials Tuesdays at 8, only on Marquee. Hub with us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Hub, good afternoon. How are you today?
I am good. How are you guys doing?
We are doing well and much better than John Gruden. I find this story fascinating on a number of levels, largely beyond John Gruden's involvement in it, frankly. But I'm curious what you think the most noteworthy parts of the story so far are.
Well, yeah, I don't know that it's a complicated story. I'm astounded that there are people who actually want to talk about cancel culture and things like that. I have my own issues with cancel culture when you're trying to erase history. But in this case, this was 10 years ago. Things that he said were as offensive and unacceptable and ridiculous then as they are now. Apparently, there were repeated emails that went on over a period of time. And he didn't get fired. He quit. Even he knew, you know, this was it. And that he could be that stupid to have done what he did. And, you know, I don't know the guy personally, so I'm not going to go into, you know, what he meant and what he didn't mean. But you don't say things like that if you don't mean it. I mean, I certainly don't say things like that. And so I think that he got exactly what he deserved. I think that there probably is more of this, you know, in the NFL than any of us would like or want to hear about. But he got caught. You know, the other people may be doing the same thing. That'd make it okay. So, I mean, to me, it's kind of cut and dried. You know, the more information that came out, the more I was on with Dan and Layla as recently as yesterday morning and said that there have to be consequences. It felt ridiculous to me that he was on the sideline Sunday, but I didn't personally know what the appropriate consequences were. And then as more information's come out, John Gruden decided the consequences, and I couldn't agree with what he did more. He needed to quit.
We're wondering, Hub, if there's more in terms of stray casts from these 650,000 emails that got released, because why John Gruden? This seems to be a leak that was directly put into the bloodstream to go after John Gruden. So we're wondering if that's targeted, and we're wondering if there's anything else that's going to come of those 650,000 emails. That's the part that we're wondering about in terms of complexity.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't know who the leak was, and so it's certainly positive that person had it in for Gruden, and I guess that's unfortunate, but still, if this was going on, I think it's still he got what he deserved, and it's appropriate that he is paying for it. Are there others? Well, as I just said, I'm sure there are others out there. Now, whether they're in this trove of emails, again, this is an investigation of the Washington football team. And the only reason he pops in is because he and Bruce Allen, who was the number two guy in the organization then, were so close. So I suppose there could be other things from other acquaintances of Bruce Allen. At this point, this is not connected to Dan Snyder in any way, who is the guy who probably, you know, should pay serious, I don't know what the word I want is, penance for, you know, what went on with his organization. But yeah, I suppose we'll wait and see what else might come out. But I think it's probably going to be fairly narrowly channeled with that one organization.
But that to me seems to be the issue here, because why was the report that cost all this money able to be sealed from the public into the Washington football team when the Deflategate report, the Ray Rice report, the Richie Incognito report, those are all public when it's about players? But when it's about Dan Snyder's football team and that level of harassment, the only way we get any glimpse into any of the findings come from some sort of anonymous leak whistleblower situation, and the person who pays consequences for it is an employee of the Raiders when the investigation was into Washington.
Yeah, Danny, I mean, I don't know. If my memory serves me correctly, the initial stuff about Rice, about those other things you mentioned, was leaked as well, and then it became public after it initially leaked. I mean, in the case of Rice, it was a video, you know, but by some bystander that went viral. So I don't know, honestly. I'm not agreeing or disagreeing. It's just not something I've thought a lot about. I suppose it is interesting. I guess I need to think more about it.
Yeah, I think that to me is, there's a $10 million fine. Like the Washington clearly did something wrong, right? Obviously, mm-hmm. They did a lot of things wrong. They had to hire a new president. They needed to hire Ron Rivera. They had to pay an 8-figure fine. There was an 11-month investigation. 650,000 emails were gone over, right? This was clearly something crazy. And I am with you. What happened to John Gruden, no one should be making some sort of case to defend John Gruden. That's not what this is. It's just, it's wild to me that we won't know anything really about it, about Washington, except what we now know from John Gruden's emails. It just seems like the owners, and this is maybe not the most amazing observation in the world, but billionaires have power, millionaires are rich, right? Like Dan Snyder gets protected because he's in the club that owns one of these teams, and even someone who is very powerful, who's outside of that class within the NFL, like John Gruden, can be sacrificed.
Yeah, Danny, I mean, I hear you, and I think in many cases what you're saying is true. In this particular case, though, it's going to come out the same way Gruden did. If something isn't announced, you know, we don't have, unless I've missed something, any final findings on this report. So there's a lot more coming. I think that, you know, Snyder's going to take a bath at some point, too. And you know, if not, then that's clearly inappropriate on the league's part, but it'll leak out anyway. So I guess we wait and see how this, we haven't heard the last, seen the last straw on this. So again, I understand your concern. I agree with it if in fact Snyder is going to get protected because nobody could deserve it less. But I'm not sure that that's going to be the case, you know, so I guess we wait and see on that.
Hub Arkish is our guest here on Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score. White Sox down 6-1 headed to the seventh inning of their playoff game. Hub, what did you make of Bill Lazor's second week as play caller? And let's stay with the offense for a moment and talk about the physical, run-based, impose-your-will identity that's slowly becoming established here for the Bears.
You know, you look at the results. You know, you've got two wins. It's the exact same – well, not the exact same thing. It's better than what happened last year when Matt Nagy handed off the play calling and they went 3-3. They've identified what they have, the talent, the experience, and the ability to do well. And they're doing it, you know, and they're avoiding the kind of mistakes that can cost you games when you are following this kind of game plan. This is the irony is that you go to Justin Fields instead of Andy Dalton, and this is the ultimate game management, you know, not just from the quarterback, but from the coaching staff and everyone else too. And I think it was important because, you know, it's what I've been talking about all season long is you play to win. You give all 53 guys a chance. That's what they're doing right now. Didn't know if it would work as well with Fields as you hoped it would with Dalton. But I thought that I start with my credit. I don't know if you guys saw my column yesterday at ShawLocal.com, but, you know, for the beating this guy has taken, give Matt Nagy some credit. You know, it took too long. It should have happened sooner. But he finally understood what we've all been screaming. He needed to be the head coach, not the offensive guru. And here, 2 weeks out, it's starting to pay some real dividends. Coincidental with that, because these two are not necessarily related. This defense is now starting to become Sean Desai's defense and getting healthy, too. This is something else that we talked about. Is there still enough left in this defense to be good enough to create a playoff team, even if they're not a legitimate Super Bowl threat or whatever it may be? And it's beginning to look like that is possible. It's not done yet, guys. There's more to see. The Raiders were awful Sunday. They're not going to win if they score 20 points this Sunday. But, you know, all these things happened this past Sunday. And so I think you stop one game at a time and you give credit where it's due. I think it starts with Nagy. And the answer to your question, I think Lazor is doing a great job of what he's being asked to do, you know, which is get the most out of what you have in this offense right now.
Hub, we are going to talk after with you more extensively or expansively, I guess, on what we'll be looking for to kind of judge and critique and evaluate Matt Nagy going forward. I'm curious, now that the offensive head coach has given up play calling, how will you determine beyond the win-loss record whether or not Matt Nagy is doing a good job as a head coach?
Well, you know, Danny, I think I understand your question. I'm not going to dodge it, but it clearly does start with the win-loss record because, you know, the Woods are full of guys who you know, people never got comfortable with his coaches, but they won games, they won playoff games, and even got to Super Bowls. I'm not sure a bad coach ever won a Super Bowl.
Mike McCarthy.
Well, the ring argues that maybe he's not a bad coach. But again, we've had that before. We'll have it again, I'm sure. So, you know, we can do that later.
Okay.
I think that, you know, what I'm looking for from Matt now is you know, moving down parallel tracks. Not only the offense, he's still the head coach. He's still full. He's still the number one guy in charge of the offense. The offense has got to take a step forward. I think Justin Fields has shown significant improvement in each of his first three starts, and that's what you're looking for. But at the end of the day, guys, what this offense is doing, Justin Fields' numbers just are not acceptable. And so we're going to continue to judge him on the development of Justin Fields, on the development of the offense, on his game management, which is clearly better when he's not calling plays than when he is. But still, he hasn't really, if you think about it, the last couple of weeks, had that game-changing decision to make. And then the development of the rest of his young talent. One of the things that's just annoyed me for the last, you know, few months is not that it is obviously critical to develop Justin Fields, but it's also critical to develop all these other young players on the team because there are a number of them. And when you see a Khalil Herbert step in and do what he did on Sunday, when you see the progress of a Darnell Mooney, Jalen Johnson has made a quantum leap at cornerback this year. You've got Kendall Vildor playing well. This is what you judge the head coach on, you know, and now that's all good stuff, but they're still not, in my estimation, one of the seven best teams in the NFC. And that's where you need to get. That's the next step. But along the way, I think you judge them on what they're doing to get there.
I see a lot of scheming and creative personnel usage on the back end of the defense from Sean Desai, and that was his area of expertise. Deion Bush playing a bunch. DeAndre Houston Carson with a great interception. What are you seeing from Sean Desai overall that led you to say, as he did earlier in the interview, that he's starting to make this defense his own?
You know, I think the turning point for this defense, because obviously it wasn't very good against the Rams, and you know, they played much better against Cincinnati, but they've taken steps each week too. And to me, the turning point was the first time he put Khalil Mack and Robert Quinn on the same side. You know, that's becoming somewhat of a staple now, not for 60 minutes, but they're doing it more often. Every time they do it, it wreaks havoc. It was something that nobody figured out last year. You know, and so I thought that was his kind of signature move. That was when it all started. He also needs to get healthy. You know, I mean, Sunday was the first time he had 10 of his 11 starters on the field. and still didn't have Akiem Hicks. And so as he gets more pieces, he's more comfortable, I'm sure, doing more things. You know, the more pressure you get up front, the more you're going to disguise your coverages and the more games you're going to play in the back. Well, now they're leading the NFL in sacks, and so you start to see what's happening here. As you just pointed out, I thought the use of all of his DBs Sunday was inspiring. You see Deion Bush making big plays. You see DeAndre Houston Carson making a huge play in the game that Tayshaun Gibson comes back from injury. I thought, it was so quiet, but Danny Trevathan, looked fine for the time he was out there, and they worked him and Ogletree in seamlessly. Nobody's talked about it. Nobody noticed it. We asked Sean last Thursday, Ogletree's played well, but when Trevathan's back, and his answer was, well, why do you assume that the one or the other is the starter? Why does one or the other have to be the starter? And he's got these guys buying in. I think that's the biggest thing that I see right now. Every one of these defensive players you talk to says, they're following Coach Sean. They really like what he's doing.
We're talking to Hub Arkish here, Parkins and Spiegel on the Score. Last thing from me, Hub, you talked about, Fields' numbers and production being unacceptable. My thing for the whole year was development of Justin Fields, and it's great that they're winning with him, but I do want him to be trusted a little bit more. And I know that game script has been a big part of it. And at some point they will be down 14-0 and he will have to throw. And I'm sure it will not be pretty all the time because he is, of course, not all the way ready or a finished product. But I'm curious what you think of the conservative nature. And when you say, his production needs to be higher, is that a product in your mind of strictly Fields' readiness or them not letting him do more? Because he has flashed some when they've let him throw.
No, I think it's both, and I think it's more how conservative they're being with him. I am not. Here's the problem: is every time you try and do objective analysis of the kid, you're being negative and not being fair, and that's just not the case. I love the kid. I like what I'm seeing so far.
I'm 100% with you.
I know. They clearly are holding him back. And I think that's probably wise. They're being careful with him, but I think what everybody's missing is he has to do more with the 20 throws he's getting or the 19 throws he's getting, or I think it was 17 the week before.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I've noticed, he's been pretty ineffective running the football, and that's not something I expected. He had the one big third down run last week, but other than that, he doesn't do much when he runs with the football. Now, again, it's a learning process. It has to happen. But I think that he's going to need a moment now. You're getting the point going into his fourth start. This is not the week. With the Packers, you want to do whatever you think you have to win the game, and that's probably not cutting him loose. Although, the Packers' defense is not one that scares me a little bit. But sometime in the next 4 or 5 weeks, he's going to have games where he starts to throw for 250 and even threaten that 300-yard mark. I mean, one of the things I noticed about Sunday, and I hadn't looked at it before, but I was just curious, I looked at the 5 rookie starters. And the other 4, and albeit only one other one won, which is the most important thing, but the other 4 all had more than twice the production that he did. Even Zach Wilson in the Jets losing effort, because the Jets were the only team in the NFL, 31 other teams, the only team that put up less offense Sunday than the Bears at 251 was the Jets at 230. But obviously the Bears got most of theirs on the ground. Wilson at least did most of that through the air. Now, I still would rather have Fields than any of those other kids except for Trevor Lawrence. And some have one or two more starts. Lance was in his first start. And so it certainly is fair to measure him against what the other 4 are doing as they all go down this track together. And he's got to find some more production, even with the chances that they're giving him.
Maybe this is the week, Hub. We were looking at the year Tom Brady stepped in for Drew Bledsoe and Bill Belichick kept it super simple with Antoine Smith and the running game, and Brady was 13 of 23, then he was 12 for 24. Third game, 33 of 54. So one of those is coming, right? One of those is coming for Fields. You can try to shut it down and play like this all you want, but a game is going to force him to do that sooner or later.
Well, we'll see. I don't know. I mean, with the way this defense, I don't want to see him throw the ball 54 times. That's not good for anybody, and that's not part of his development. It'd be fun. But I do think the game has to be coming where he's got to put it up 35 times, and then you see what happens. But the other thing, Matt, is that the offensive line is getting a little better every week. I am fascinated by what they're doing with Alex Bars. I mean, he is not, you know, sometimes he's in that tight end position, but now they're putting him in motion, and they have him out there sometimes when they have, you know, 12 personnel out there in addition to him. I asked Matt the question yesterday. I think he thought I was, you know, trying to have fun with him, which I was, but I was also serious. I think they've created a new position here. You know, I want to see how much more they're going to do with Alex Bars. And so they are doing some other creative things with this offense. You hope, you know, that they're better than 500 until Montgomery gets back, because if they are, you know, then you can do more in the ground game and the passing game. Their third and fourth most trusted receivers right now are David Montgomery and Damian Williams after throwing the ball to Robinson and Mooney. They're doing this right so far. I like the way they're handling it. Once they made the commitment, I think they're taking the right steps. And I think the ball is as much in Fields' court as it is theirs now to have a game where he does more with what they're giving him, not that they just have to give him more.
Hub, thank you as always. We'll talk next Tuesday.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thank you. That is Hub Arkish. We will continue to update you on the White. Should we check in with Shane again?
I'd like to. I imagine it's only sadder than the last time we checked in with Shane, but maybe we can infuse some life in him and the crowd.
All right. We'll see how Shane's holding up, if he's enjoying himself at least out there. Tanny did the Goodfellas treatment for John Gruden. It was spectacular. That's coming up at 5. And other ways that you and I will be grading and evaluating Matt Nagy going forward. And yes, I know wins and losses matter, but I am curious about beyond wins and losses, because there are just objectively going to be some games here. This team's just not good enough.
When you and Hub are talking, I feel like a child of a messy divorce. I really do.
No, there was a lot of agreement in there somewhere.
Oh, but the tension. It's underneath everything, and I just... One day I will be in therapy and I'll say, Doctor, this is where Hub and Danny hurt me. Right here.
I said,
the heart.
Hub, just how will you evaluate Matt Nagy as a coach other than wins and losses?
Don't ask me that, Danny.
Danny, well, it all begins with wins and losses. I know. That's why I said beyond. I didn't want you to just say wins and losses.
Danny, I don't think this is particularly interesting. Hub, let me tell you why it's interesting.
No bad coach has ever won a Super Bowl. Mike McCarthy. Yeah, I know.
Well, the ring would say otherwise. Yeah.
Yeah, well.
Guys, just make out already. I'll feel better.
We will discuss.
Or not.
Yeah. No, I don't.
It can be a little hard.
I don't think that's
okay.
Where how this ends.
Not the right answer.
It'll be... Next Tuesday at 2, at 4, whatever. We'll figure it out. It's Parkinson's Beagle on the Score.
And there's a swing and a foul ball, and Reardon makes his third catch right up against the screen. No tag. Tell you, this kid's got the nerves of a cat burglar.
Buddy's ignoring our requests to check in at Guaranteed Rate Field. We'll get him eventually. Bottom of the hour brought to you by DuckDuckGo. Couple of developments. White Sox are still down 6-1, seventh inning. Astros bullpen has put up zeros since pulling McCullers after 4. Luis Robert left the game last inning. They've described it as right leg tightness.
Yeah.
So Adam Engel is in center field for the White Sox. To me, I mean, there's many stories of the game, obviously, and the story of the series so far is the Astros are the better team. But... 2 double plays, 0-for-6 with runners on base for the White Sox so far in this game.
That's big. That's important. How about the starting rotation overall? I mean, if this is where we go out, you know, where the White Sox go out, you're going to look at what? Dylan Cease gave you an inning and a third. Rodon because of...
2 2/3.
2 2/3. Lance Lynn. I mean, overall, it's 12 1/3 innings for your top 4 starting pitchers in 4 games. And you had the best starting rotation in the American League all season long. So I know how heavily the bullpen is to be leaned on, and it's understandable, but Kopech gives up runs in his 2 bulk appearances as well. But 14 earned runs given up by the 4 starting pitchers in just 12 1/3.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to win many playoff series
doing
it that way, especially when you've only had the long ball in one series. I mean, Gavin Sheets hit one today, but, you know, it showed up really in Game 3. A solo shot in Game 4 is not going to be enough either.
I hope we're not doing full-on series post-game in the 5 o'clock hour today, but it is conceivable.
It is certainly trending in that direction. But we'll keep getting updates and following along with the game, and then we'll go full Sox post when the game goes final. I think it's an interesting thing, and we've talked about it a lot this year. you know, my thing before the season was 1A, develop Justin Fields, see what you have in Justin Fields, answer what you have in Justin Fields by the end of the season, right? That was the number one goal for the season because the Super Bowl was unattainable. And then the second one was you want to know whether or not Matt Nagy and Justin Fields is your coach quarterback partnership,
yeah,
if you can. So you ask the question of, now that Nagy has given up play calling, how do we evaluate Matt Nagy, the head coach?
Right, because these things take on added significance, and they should as we're watching this stuff. And the number one thing, of course, is going to be game management. So clock management, whether to use a challenge at the right time, situational smarts, making sure the quarterback takes as much time off the clock as possible, field position stuff. I mean, I know Hub answered wins and losses, but, you know, aside from that, as we go deeper.
And he said player development.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, player development matters, and that's a great one. But would you think that game management, I want to make sure that I have a terrific game manager on Sundays. If I'm going to end up good, I want to make sure I have a game manager who's going to help me be great.
Yeah, I think that that is obviously a big one. It's the stuff that drives me the craziest, but I try to do as disciplined of a job as I can as not overrating it. And here's why. Like, it matters a lot, and it feels like it would be the thing that we should – it feels like it's the thing that should be perfected. Like, every team, hire a dude from MIT – who has a direct line to the head coach, who is constantly evaluating the game solely through the prism of game theory. When do I use my timeouts? When do I challenge? When do I go for two? When do I go for it on fourth down? Do I call a timeout before the two-minute warning, after the you know what I mean? Like, constantly going through that sort of thing,
mm-hmm,
based on time, score, situation, and game flow, and then giving that to the head coach.
Well, and
they don't.
There are a couple organizations. Is Baltimore still the only one that has that guy, as far as we know?
No, more teams have that guy, but some teams still do not do it with 100%. Like, they do not give it 100% autonomy. You know, that it's like, it's a part of it, but it is not necessarily all the way there.
How about his public leadership and demeanor? You know, like the way that the forward facing part of Matt Nagy's job that is important and to be evaluated in a slightly different way. And I feel like he is a different guy over the past couple weeks in that regard.
We'll get back to this in a second. We're in between innings here, so we can get a connection at Guaranteed Rate with our guy Shane Reardon. Shane, I mean, we can imagine, but what's the atmosphere like in there given the deficit and the time in the game?
The wind has been completely lit out of the sails of the fans here. It's, I won't call it dead, but it's not alive, if that makes much sense. And I'm sure you guys talked about it when it happened, or maybe you didn't, but I don't understand at all. I know Luis Robert came out. I was in the bathroom when that happened, but putting Angle in center field as opposed to moving Leury Garcia over to center and putting Vaughn in right after the pinch hit double he had on Sunday night, like, it seemed like he's really feeling it. And that didn't make any sense to me at all, to take Luis Robert's bat out of the lineup, not by choice, but and then replace it with Adam Engel. Did you guys talk about that?
You know, we
did not.
We did not, because, I don't know, it seems larger to us. I understand you're at the game and you're feeling the possible offensive swing of getting a good bat in there, but the whole thing just has a sort of pervasive feel to us watching from afar.
Yeah, I mean, Robert, you know, injury, right? So obviously, yeah, not by choice.
Yeah, he just wants Vaughn's bat in there, which I understand. I thought they were going to get to the bullpen after Dusty took out McCullers, but that's not happening, Shane.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, it's weak ground balls up the middle and weak ground balls to third base. There's no inspiration right now. There's zero inspiration. And in the first few innings of this game, the crowd gave them every reason to be inspired, and there's just absolutely nothing.
Shane, be honest. Did you cheer when they hit Altuve by the pitch?
No, it's stupid. You're up one run? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Well, it seemed like 98% of the crowd was cheering.
I know, and there were quite a few people telling everybody to shut the hell up because you just put somebody on base and you're up by one in the third inning.
And that guy scored.
Inning, whatever the hell it was.
And Altuve
came around to score.
Yeah.
I mean, that Grandal at bat was brutal. He had three straight strikes to Grandal. Maybe it was Maldonado. It was the Grandal at bat where he struck out. The first three pitches were balls, and that was trash. It turned the game around. But It's depressing. I'll put it that way. It's depressing.
Shane, I always worry in these situations that a crowd's going to turn angry, that people are going to turn either on each other or just, you know, start yelling, screaming, throwing stuff. Are you seeing any of that in your section?
No, it's pretty tame because it's so quiet. There was one fight to the right of us, maybe about 45 feet away, but that was like the third inning. They took the guy out right away. But the bleachers have been pretty quiet, and I just people aren't up enough right now to even be angry, whether it be with the guys in the field or with one another. It's just, it's a dead crowd.
All right, man, get back to enjoying the game. I know the action has resumed and being with your dad. Thank you for the I don't even know what this was.
Yeah.
This
is a dead crowd.
Wellness check, maybe?
Uh-huh. Yeah, a wellness check. That's right. Because you said last time you had not really confronted the possibility of this being an elimination game.
No.
I would imagine with six outs to go, you've maybe confronted that reality?
Yeah. I'm going to go get about 15 beers of cork after this. So.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right, buddy. That's Shane Reardon in left field.
The crowd is dead. This is a terrible time, and I'm upset. And Danny goes, go back to having fun with your dad. That's not what's happening, Danny. He's not having fun with his dad.
Oh, that's right. You're supposed to listen to the guys. Yeah.
This crowd is dead. I'm sad. I would like to kill myself and a lot of other people. All right. Go back to having fun with your dad. No, I understand.
Yeah.
Because we wanted it to be fun with him and his dad, with him and anybody. We want Sox fans to be having fun. It sucks when a baseball game is cold and lifeless and you're down by five and you are helpless in the crowd for an hour and a half to two and a half hours of lifeless baseball. It's one of the worst things ever.
So we've mentioned, to get back to the Nagy conversation, we mentioned player development. You've mentioned game management.
Yes.
And then you said public facing. So you mean like how he speaks to the media and communicates to the fans, the press conferences?
How he represents the organization as the front man and as the face of it. And it's been rough for him, but that's been, of course, inextricably tied to the offense looking like ass.
Yeah.
So now that's a little bit better.
That's real.
Yeah, it's cleaner, and that is real. I think he has a chance to reclaim himself in that way. Or do you think he has fully crossed the Rubicon over into laughingstock, which so many of these guys do?
I don't think it matters quite as much because it's a press conference. It's talking. Man, the guys like him. They like him.
That matters.
He is a head coach needs to be a culture builder. He has the team and the locker room, and they like Club Dub. Mm-hmm. They like that stuff. They seem to play hard for him. They did come out of the 6-game losing streak, all that stuff.
I'm glad you took it here. Yes, because that's obviously the culture is a big thing. Part of that in football is the physicality and the discipline of it. And I have wondered at times about Matt Nagy, physical football guy and imposer of will and a guy that people want to run through a freaking brick wall for. I've wondered if he has that in him. And we're seeing some of that. I guess we've seen it every once in a while. But I'll tell you, when Mario Edwards Jr. commits the second of his penalties this past Sunday, and it's on a 2nd-and-6 run play deep in the Raiders' territory, 11 minutes, 45 seconds left to go in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
And he commits a penalty that's 15 yards. It's really obviously blatant and stupid. At that point, I need the head coach, in concert with the defensive coordinator, to step up and say, come here, get off the field. Get off the field. We don't do that. You have to be smarter. We have to be stronger. Be tough, but play to that edge, but don't go over that edge. And Mario Edwards Jr. was taken out of the game. Good. Good. I'm sitting there watching it and feeling that at the moment. Like, don't do that kind of stuff and let them back into a game. The Raiders did that at one point with the roughing the passer penalty on the goal line when Fields was able to then bring the Bears down the field a little bit. So I need to see Matt Nagy with some physical and disciplinary control of his team. Not that he's responsible for false starts and those kind of penalties, but limit the personal foul penalties and make people accountable when they do stupid things.
I think that's totally reasonable, the accountability part. Measuring like team penalties, therefore head coach, I think is just always a dangerous thing. Second most penalized team in the league right now, Tampa. They won the Super Bowl last year. Bruce Arians is their coach. Like, Jermaine Effetti's on this team. Guy's a penalty machine. Part of it, if you have a bad offensive lineman, they're going to hold more. That's more on Ryan Pace, you know what I mean? Or it could be on Juan Castillo. It could also be on the bad offensive lineman. So going with team penalties, bad coach is to me like way too simplistic, but specific examples
dumb,
of that.
Like dumb, undisciplined, dead ball penalties and then not feeling a sense of accountability about it. So you let that stuff get out of control.
All totally reasonable. We have not mentioned my number one thing.
Okay.
We will get to it coming up because I think it is certainly not what I will be looking for from Matt Nagy the rest of the way. And I've frankly trying to be judging him by it his entire time here. It's next on The Score. 7-1 Astros on top of the White Sox in the top of the eighth inning. Six outs to make up six runs. We will have full White Sox postgame reaction for you right here. Parkins and Spiegel on The Score. We're talking about how we're going to evaluate Matt Nagy. Hub talked about overall player development, wins and losses. You've mentioned outward, like the CEO type stuff, press conferences, how he represents the fan base,
yep,
game management, timeout, situational football, challenges, discipline was a big one.
Mm-hmm. Mario Edwards Jr. not back on the field at all after that second personal foul on him in the fourth quarter against the Raiders. What's the biggest one for you, Danny?
It is still Justin Fields. And specifically, we're going to get glimpses from Fields the more he becomes empowered and comfortable, whether it is interactions between the two of them on the sideline, whether it's what he says publicly, like him saying when Bill Lazor took over play calling, he was really calming. He was up in the booth. It was calm. Whereas with Coach Nagy, there's a lot going on the sidelines. It's loud down there. He's got a lot of things going on.
Mm-hmm.
That calming presence. I want to try to get the sense that Justin Fields is comfortable with Matt Nagy.
Yeah, that bond still matters.
It is because a head coach who's an offensive guy, even if he doesn't do the play calling, he still is involved in the game plan.
And he's
the
here
whole week.
Absolutely. He was a quarterback. He thinks like a quarterback, and he's been around great quarterbacks.
So there is no question that even if he gave up play calling to you or me, Matt Nagy would still be the one. He will always be the one involved in the game planning for that week for the specific opponent. And it's why, like Andy Reid has had a lot of problems in his day with clock management. But he still is a Hall of Famer and one of the greatest coaches to ever do it and in the NFL right now because of his game planning and his play calling. He's so good at this team's bad against the screen,
mm-hmm,
working a bunch of screen passes. This team's susceptible on the outside. So,
you're still banking on Matt Nagy to have some of that in him, not stripping away the entirety of his offensive game planning and strategery.
I just
intentional misspeak.
It's there. Whether we want it to be or not, it is a part of his job. It's a part of any head coach's job.
Absolutely. It's a huge part. You're supposed to be that guy in all phases. That's why you're the head coach. You're supposed to be that guy who can even look at it from the defensive perspective and have learned as a head coach how to attack.
But like Bill Belichick is the head coach, he's the CEO. But he is specifically involved in the defensive game plan for the week. Josh McDaniels is the person who's the play right for New England.
But Bill's the one who decided they needed tight ends and went out and got Hernandez and Gronk. He's the one who decided they needed Randy Moss and told McDaniels how they're going to do things.
Right. He's a football genius. That's an extreme example. He's involved in all of it. But so like this week, Jair Alexander is out. Kevin King might play. He's been brutal. Eric Stokes is a corner for Green Bay. Like, if this is a week where Allen Robinson gets four targets, that's insane.
Mm-hmm.
The weakness of the Packers is they are not nearly as strong at corner right now, you know? You have to figure out in a given week, where is this other team susceptible? You play Tampa in a couple weeks. They are a great run defense. If you keep pounding the ball, pounding the ball, pounding the ball.
They're down, what, four healthy corners?
Yeah.
They have been anyway.
You know, and I'm not saying that you don't try to run the ball. And if it's your strength, I'm not saying you don't run off play action. I'm not saying you go to passing it 50 times.
All right. So
but like, if you're stubborn in that way, mm-hmm, as opposed to saying, let's also game plan to exploit this other team's weaknesses, man, that's another area of Matt Nagy's stubbornness that, frankly, can't exist going forward for Justin Fields. You need to have a coach who is going to game plan specifically for the other team's weaknesses.
All right, that's good. I'm going to write that one down, and we'll have it at the top of the list because I agree. That is the very basics of being a head coach. When you said Fields specifically, I thought you were still thinking about Justin molding Justin Fields into a cerebral quarterback fully in command, because that's a big, big deal too, because really I don't know that I trust Bill Lazor to be that guy long term. He doesn't have a track record of being that guy.
This is not a great coaching staff, because Matt Nagy was seen as a lame duck coach. People left this coaching staff. Mm-hmm. Bill Lazor, his big experience is, you know, longest tenure is Cincinnati Andy with Dalton.
Right.
You know, this is
John DeFilippo has bounced around and been let go from a couple different organizations.
Yeah, so it is still like the person who was the most blue chip coaching prospect to develop a franchise quarterback is still your head coach in Matt Nagy. So it is going to be Fields' development in every way is still tied to the head coach, even if he's no longer the play caller.
We've reached the point in the White Sox game where an angry fan has ripped his own shirt off and ended up shirtless and screaming in the stands. There was no beard, so I'm pretty sure it wasn't Shane, unless he shaved. And Craig Kimbrell out there getting booed right now.
I've seen some images of Sox fans leaving on social media. Yeah, it's about that time. Two runners on, two outs, eighth inning. Houston still batting against Craig Kimbrell. White Sox trail 7-1 in the eighth of game four. Plenty of Sox posts to come as soon as it goes final, even though if it feels like it's already over. It's Parkinson Spiegel on the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.